Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, it's... What is the name of our show?
It's James Bonding.
And what is the name of me?
You are Matt.
And who are you?
I'm also Matt.
And this is the For Your Eyes Only episode.
It's all coming back.
That's right. Oh my God. And our guest today, this is very exciting because we've got John Ross Bowie from Speechless.
Hi.
How are you, John?
I'm great.
From Speechless. And they still let him run off to the Big Bang Theory, which is amazing.
That's
yeah.
right. We should
mention
that
too. They're like, yeah, sure, go.
But
they're very generous. Yeah.
An interesting connection is that your wife on Speechless actually played a small part in GoldenEye.
That's right. That's
oh,
right.
My goodness.
And I'm
surprised we didn't come in that you should... Oh, well, yeah. I should have come in and done a GoldenEye episode. But yeah, my TV misses. It was one of her... first roles. It predates Good Will Hunting.
Yeah. Really?
I think so.
It does, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I always thought it was kind of like, let's put her as a known entity into this
movie. No, it was kind of a break for her. She's mentioned it. We've talked about it. And it was, she was sort of an actress / singer kicking around London fresh out of drama school. And she got that gig. And then that led to other things. But
it's interesting. She's a singer and they purposefully make her sound.
Like, yeah.
Like she can't sing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or she had to do that. I've heard that it's very difficult to sing bad if you can sing well. Unfortunately, I don't have that problem. I can sing bad just fine. But
just comes to you naturally?
Yeah.
Oh, what a gift.
The bad singing is a gift. John, what's your history with James Bond? Tell us if you have one. And
I do. It's weird. I got into... I saw Moonraker was my first Bond in the theaters.
Wow.
And loved it, you know, because it's a Star Wars knockoff. It's clearly a cash in. It really is.
Yeah,
you know, it's the most
course.
Blatant. It's one of the most trend sensitive of the Bond films,
yeah.
I think.
Of a very trend sensitive franchise. That is the most bald-faced, yeah.
It really is. You know, they're like, it's very much like, oh, this is a thing the kids are into right now. And sure enough, they yeah. fucking were. This 8-year-old was raptured. What is that, 79?
Yes.
Moonraker?
Yeah.
So I'm 8. And it became clear that, like, oh, this is what I'm going to be into this. This is the thing I'm going to be into. And then I saw For Your Eyes Only the weekend it came out and did not care for it.
Oh, interesting.
Just didn't have enough...
Didn't have enough gimmicks.
Well, yeah. I mean... If
no space, no gadgets.
Yeah. Going from Moonraker to this very stripped down For Your Eyes Only situation, I can imagine as a kid, it's like, what is
it was
this?
Abrupt, yeah. But it was still very much a thing. I was like, well, okay, this was an off thing, but I'm still going to follow this. And what was great was growing up in New York, we used to have... And they're coming back now, but we used to have all these great little rep cinemas all over the place. Mm-hmm. The Hollywood Twin or the Theater 80 St. Mark's, and they'd show Bond double features all the time, and they would just run through the cycle. So I saw all the Connerys on the big screen before I was in high school.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
It was really awesome. I saw all the Connerys and Honor Majesty's Secret Service.
Man, that's fantastic luck to grow up near somewhere that was playing them.
Yeah, it was. They would just do double features in chronological order.
Oh,
it was really, really cool.
That's a luxury.
And then I saw all the Moores on ABC would show them.
Yeah,
it was like a big Sunday night thing. And then for whatever reason, high school came around and girls became an option and Timothy Dalton something just unclicked with me and I just kind of lost interest and didn't come back to the franchise till Daniel Craig.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Almost very similar
to
me.
I definitely took a sabbatical during the Brosnan years.
Yeah.
I went dark.
I've seen GoldenEye. Yeah. And I didn't see it when it came out. I saw it on video years later. And I haven't seen it since I've been working with Minnie, actually, though. I should go back and rewatch it.
Yeah, watch that Rhinestone Cowboy outfit. It's really something. Yeah.
She's singing, what, Stand By Your Man, I think?
Yes,
right?
Yeah. That's exactly what she's singing.
She's Russian?
She's Russian, yeah. Thick, yeah. Russian accent.
Yeah, she's good with, she's got a good ear for, well, her voice in real life is a series of dialects, because she's, her mom's quite posh and her dad was not, so she'll go from, like, the Dowager to Eliza Doolittle in this course of one sentence. It's the damnedest
thing. Dowager to Doolittle.
Yes. it really is a hell of a thing to listen to. So I was a fan. I read a couple of the books in junior high and didn't get a ton out of them, but, you know, read them. I think I read Dr. No, and I think I read maybe... I read Thunderball. Mm. I read Thunderball. I remember reading Thunderball and being like, "Oh, all right, this is not the movie at all." I've got like enough like weird trivia. Like I'm pretty sure, I haven't double checked this, but the original M is short for Miles Messervy.
That's right.
Am I right about that? Wow. Yeah. So I have like dumb shit like that floating around
good.
In
that's
my
a
head.
Deep cut.
It's a deep cut. Yeah. But it's not representative of like, oh, then he must be an expert. It's just this like these little random trivia crumbs floating
that's how
around
I am about everything in life. I really am. Like I can rattle off a couple of things, even about some sports that I have no business knowing anything about, but I don't always understand what they mean. But I just keep them in my back pocket. I'm sure it comes probably from the same thing of like doing improv, and you need to be able to reference something or at least play a character that knows what they're talking about.
I think most of the really good improvisers I know have this sort of vague, dusty old file cabinet in the back of their head that's just filled with like, oh, what do I have? Do I have any baseball stuff in here? I must have something, right? I got like a...
Yeah. But as I get older, that is valuable real estate that is taking up actual speech and motor function now that I am sacrificing as I trip over steps and can't remember words, but I can still pull out all this trivia.
You need to remember the lines from The Wrath of Khan.
Yes, exactly.
No, it's true. It really is true. And all of this would be it's super annoying that I have all this stuff in my head and have never really been great at balancing a checkbook. You know, that's if I'm not in the arts, I'm not. It's not a good life for me at all. It's not. It's a bad scene. But yeah, I I'm a fan. I'm definitely a fan, and it's been interesting. You go back and watch the Connerys now, and they're a little bit their museum pieces. The action sequences don't necessarily work, but they're such interesting time capsules of mores and fashions and worldviews, God help us.
Yeah, I know. And what's interesting too is I find that what they once existed as a travelogue now works as like a time travelogue. So you can go anywhere, you can fly anywhere. It's no big deal to travel exotically anymore for the most part. Mm-hmm. That wasn't the case back then. But now I find the excitement of the Connery era to be just that mid-century sort of thing, and to see what countries were like at that time, even if it's a heightened sense. I just love it as a transport in time.
Just the stuff, the Vegas stuff in Diamonds Are Forever looks incredible now. The Jamaica stuff in Dr. No, it's just really, it's a real time machine. It's fascinating. Yeah.
Well, I say we go back in time to 1981.
Wow.
For Your Eyes Only.
I think this is the James Bond movie I've seen the least.
Really?
Yeah, it's never been one of my go-to ones and favorites, and I'm just going to come out with it right now. I've enjoyed this movie this last time more than I think I ever have.
Agreed.
I don't know what it is.
Agreed.
Maybe it's just because you watch these movies, especially you and I, so much that naturally one that you see the least is going to seem the freshest. So for some reason, this one really
spoke to
me.
I found myself a lot of the film just going, oh yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Really enjoy that guy and his mustache. What a choice.
There's great stuff in this movie.
Yeah.
I definitely liked it a lot more than I did upon its its opening weekend 37 years ago. But and it's there's also some disastrous shit, which we'll get to. But the good stuff is really entertaining and effectively suspenseful.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to like here, a lot to unpack,
and a simple, relatively simple plot for a Bond movie compared to the others.
Yeah, it's not a nuclear missile we're looking for. No one's trying to start World War III. It's someone who's just trying to get something that doesn't belong to them to sell to the Russians.
It does seem like they're going back to From Russia with Love for that sort of thing, and it makes me think that it would make a good Craig film, like a soft reboot. Of this film would actually be kind of interesting to me.
How so?
Well, just because it's kind of low key detective on the trail. Just, you know, it doesn't have a lot of spectacle. I don't know.
I mean, the stakes. This is one of the things I didn't, because I remember just not understanding what the machine was and what it did when I was a kid.
I'm still not sure I do, but
it's early computer stuff, which 81 was just absolute gibberish
and perfectly waterproof.
Yes, apparently. But the stakes are there. If the Russians get this, they will know where all of our nuclear subs are, and that's bad.
And they can even make them launch.
And they can make them launch. Yeah, that's the other thing. That's right. Yeah. So that's legitimately scary. Spoiler alert, I do like the way it ends with like, you know, maybe this technology is just too powerful. Yeah. We should just get rid of it.
I love that ending too. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sound design was interesting though.
Oh, yeah. When it crashes.
Fascinating.
Yeah. Really went, it reminded me of like a Duran Duran music video opening or closing before or after the music, just some little coda that would go like, put that sound effect in
before John Taylor's bass kicks in. Yes. Yeah, sure.
As we would know two movies later.
You know, they're both Taylor, but they're not related.
There's three Taylors. Three Taylors.
Oh, that's three Taylors.
Andy, Roger, and John. Yeah.
God.
I actually remember I sent you that video of them at Coachella the year John Barry died.
Yeah, that's right.
And they do their encore at Coachella that year was a medley of Bond themes that went into their own. It was cool. It's really cool. It's a great YouTube find.
They're a great band.
It's about the only thing that would get me to Coachella. That.
Oh, there's absolutely no way. Yeah. There's no way I'm doing 100.
John Taylor is quite a bass player. He's an excellent.
My sister was obsessed with Duran Duran. She was a Nick Rhodes head, and she had his. I remember saying like, "Why are you so obsessed with him? You're like, you're never gonna meet him." Like, what are you going to do, marry him? And she was like, I might.
There's still time.
I wish that. I wish the end of the story was.
I know.
My brother-in-law is Nick Rhodes.
The cold open, of course, we've talked about before, but sort of tying Honor Majesty's Secret Service in. Tracy Bond's
visiting
grave.
And
Diana
the lawsuit.
Grave.
Do you know about all of that? Did any of this seem odd to you if you don't know that story? Was
I know that they were, that he was threatening to leave, that Moore was threatening to leave the franchise, so they wanted to make it clear that this was a continuum, and so they were connecting him to Lazenby in order to make the audience sort of ready for there to be a new Bond, which wasn't coming for another three movies or so. Yeah. Three? Two?
Two more movies.
Two more.
He did Octopussy and View to a Kill.
Okay. Yeah.
So I knew there was something about like brand management, but what lawsuit?
So the lawsuit, and I'm sure the listeners know this, but I'll do it in a nutshell, is that when Ian Fleming wrote Thunderball with a man named Kevin McClory prior to this franchise of Bond films, they wrote it together, which he then, it never went anywhere, and then he did the book based on that, and then they made the movie based on the book, and along comes Kevin McClory, goes, hello, I have the rights to Blofeld and to Spectre and a certain amount of things. And so this whole lawsuit happened, I guess it would have been after Diamonds Are Forever, because you never see Blofeld after Diamonds Are Forever until this film.
Oh, wow.
But they never mention him by
name. He takes the 70s
name.
Off.
Yes, yeah. He does. He does, basically. They never mention him by name in this movie.
No,
so
that's
it's
right.
Like,
they don't, do they?
It's a way to kill the character and do a fuck you to Kevin McClory, which is what this line we always talk about on here is, I'll buy you a delicatessen in stainless steel.
Yes.
Which is a reference to like a mafia buyout that they were trying to dig at Kevin McClory for being like a mafioso.
Tied up, right.
So and so weird. That lawsuit basically never got fully settled. Well, McClory got the rights. That's why Never Say Never Again exists as a remake of Thunderball.
Right.
had it all these years and finally came around after Skyfall to where this franchise, Eon, got the rights to those characters and could bring Blofeld back for Spectre.
Wow.
So it's a huge, like, full circle.
It's a long tail.
I have to say, as someone who has been sort of thrust into the role of a disability rights advocate over the past couple of years, I know it's Blofeld. I know he's a bad guy. I don't love the guy using a wheelchair getting picked up by the helicopter and dropped into an enormous industrial chimney. I don't
never fully explain why he's in a wheelchair.
Yes, we don't know why he's in a wheelchair.
I don't come to. I figured it was a callback to Majesty's Secret Service
because he's in Diamonds Are Forever without that.
Oh, right. Yeah, never mind.
Unless whatever the accident, because he kind of disappears at the end of
that movie.
Is he
Charles Gray in Diamonds Are Forever? Okay.
Yeah. And he's just the last we see of him is he's been shaking around in this small little submarine that's above the water, so
which looks a lot like the Mac and Me spaceship. That submarine.
Wow. Speaking of deep cuts, kind of puts my Miles Meservy in perspective, doesn't it? But so there's a part of me that's just like, you're picking up this guy who does not have the facility of it. This is not a fair fight. I know he was just remote controlling your helicopter, but get out of the helicopter and arrest him. Don't dump him in an industrial. And again, I do not come to the James Bond.
But
franchise
how do you
feel, for its sensitivity.
You seem to how be you a Blofeld defender here, John.
I'm a Blofeld apologist.
Do you feel differently if that he was put into a wheelchair by Bond originally? Like he was an able-bodied person, but then somehow what he did to fight Bond got him in the wheelchair in the first place. Does that matter to you?
No, I think that's somehow worse, right? Yes. Yeah, that's 100% worse.
It's in finishing
it's
the job.
It's rubbing salt into the wounds,
It's horrible to start this whole thing as a massive PC buzzkill, but I was just like, oh, that's right. Because it all came back to me. And then there's also one shot where, and it's all green screen, it's all 1981, but there is one shot where it's the worst, like, department store mannequin out on landing craft of that thing, which is not a great look.
Do we establish, is the helicopter pilot working for Universal Exports?
I wondered this myself. I think he is, but I think he's a Blofeld inside man because he mentioned it.
He's
also
not one of our best men or something.
Gives him...
No, but I felt like the priest was just being a priest.
But I think that's the film just kind of making it mysterious. But you could make a case that the priest is in on it too. That Blofeld planned this whole thing with the priest and the helicopter.
If those hockey playing teens are inside, and
all
for
of them
no
goalies.
Reason
all of
at all,
goalie
all goalies, just goalies practicing goalie stuff. If they're all in on it, then I assume the priest is in on
it
too.
Yeah, it's not a
right?
huge leap.
I don't. I also don't go for a ton of.
They were just practicing for the inevitable one-on-two power play.
I want to say that there was a sort of callback to me for the Live and Let Die, make a choice, because in the end of this gun barrel sequence where Bond comes out, shoots the screen, and it kind of goes, or whatever. What is the music when he comes in? Only. Only it goes into just the only part.
So you're
part
thinking
of,
that was just woven in.
I don't know, but it's always your non-John Barrys that want to get those little lyrical passages in, like George Martin and Bill Conti.
Well, let's talk about the music for a moment.
Wow.
So Bill Conti is a war criminal, and it is
abysmal.
It is
music.
It is terrible music. It is everything that's wrong with that era of film scoring. But what is interesting is the way it's used. And I remember there being not a ton of music in the Moore movies, but what happens throughout For Your Eyes Only, with an exception towards the end, is there's no music until Bond gets the upper hand.
Right. Yes.
Which is
that's right. All that underwater getting the ATAC sequence, all the rock climbing, the underwater scene especially felt like it needed some suspenseful music.
It slows down.
The rock climbing, I have to say, was very suspenseful.
Oh no,
that was okay because you hear the wind. I actually like that.
Yeah, and it is nerve wracking. The great little. It isn't until he manages to commandeer the helicopter that the music kicks in.
Right. Mm.
It's once he. He gets like I can't remember exactly what happens in that first car chase when he first meets Carol Bouquet, but he gets some sort of upper hand at one point, and that's when the scoring kicks in.
Yeah.
It's a I think it's a very deliberate directorial choice that I think is kind of cool.
It's interesting, and the same thing happens when he's on skis, and then that fanfare bursts in. That
they
is
don't
like,
get music. Only James gets music.
I know, but he gets a straight up Rocky theme at that point because he's fresh on the heels of his big Rocky score, and they bring in these horns that are not like Bond brass. They're like, what is it? It's like. It is straight up like anthem fanfare music that Bond gets. I once met Bill Conti because I went to like a Music of Bond thing where Vic Flick played the original acoustic guitar that the Bond theme was recorded on.
Oh, wow.
And Bill Conti was there kind of going through. It was weird because the whole Q&A was really with Bill Conti as if like, what was it like to make all the Bond and he did this one film, but then
he just did the one.
And when we rode in the elevator out together, just randomly, he came in and I was so torn of like being this close to a Bond composer, but one whose work I think actually subtracted from the film.
Yeah.
As a moment in time, I like the score as a weird oddity because it's so disco-y and so
it's 81.
Yeah. But it doesn't help the film. And I just think like a John Barry version of this movie.
Well, John Barry makes everything better, but
really amazing.
It's a shame that you have this kind of bold directorial choice of like, there'll be no extra diegetic music until our hero comes into his own. And that's when the audience is sort of emotionally cued to enjoy themselves. But it's wasted on this pedestrian 1981 score.
It's almost as if there's an orchestra sitting around going like, I don't work for anybody but Bond.
Yeah.
You know, like, as soon as he gets the upper hand, all right, the conductor raises his baton.
And it's so funny because the guitars come in and I was like, oh Christ, but I mean like the whole it's the Bond theme is known for its guitar work. It's just the way the guitars sound and they're recorded and the drums are the whole thing's a mess. Yeah, it's really not a good score. But that scene with the helicopter is, it works. It's you are not, I didn't remember how he gets out of it. I found myself very quickly invested in is he going to be okay? Even though I know for a fact we have 2 hours left and he'll be fine.
No, he's dead and it goes to black.
Yeah.
I like the tight turn it takes when it comes back. Like seeing the helicopter do that
incredible.
Tight.
Like,
oh, inside the building? Yeah, that's great. Amazing. It's incredible.
And the foreground miniature on that when it goes into the building, unbelievable. As always, the Bond movies and their foreground miniature work makes me hot. It's interesting, too, that this cold open, too, is not only not in an exotic location, it's in the gasworks. I think it's called the Brechton Gasworks. It may be the same place they filmed Full Metal Jacket for Vietnam.
Oh, okay.
If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong about
that. For the sniper scene at the end.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's gloomy as hell. Mm-hmm. There's nothing exciting about where they are. At one point, I think you see Big Ben, and that's about it, really. You don't get any of the like glamour of London. It's just probably because they had restrictions on where they could do this helicopter stuff. But I do find it interesting that everything's gray and brown and kind of like, in a way, setting you up for what this film is compared to Moonraker. Like, we're going to take it all away and you don't get anything exciting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that was like a purposeful thing, right? They sort of been like, we need to ground this. We can't.
Yeah.
We've been to space.
But then it ends with, I mean, it's bookended with two of the more whimsically silly moments in the franchise. I mean, that ending, we'll get there, but that ending is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, we'll talk about it. I also love in this opening that there's a couple shots of the stunt driver of the helicopter who's actually piloting it.
Who's up and about and fine.
His character's already dead.
Yeah.
But he's flying it, so you can kind of see the stick moving, but he's like, you know his eyes are squinting and he's watching everything, but he's got his head leaning to the side like he's dead.
Yeah, he's fine.
It's pretty good.
That's a pro right there. opening music, Fear Eyes Only theme.
Wait, real quick. Do you think they got that Blofeld drop right on the first time? How many times?
Oh, I think they nailed it.
That's incredible.
That's a stunt team that knows what they're doing.
I would hope so, but imagine if you didn't. Like, there's how many broken Blofeld wheelchair dummy things hit the side of that smokestack.
Good question.
Would you, if someone offered it to you, a Blofeld wheelchair dummy, would you take it? Follow up to that. No. Where the fuck would you put it?
You're asking, let's make it clear that you're asking Matt Gourley.
Yeah, I'll answer that in two answers. Yeah. Question one and question two, yes. Uh-huh. And number two, in the entryway of my house.
See, I don't know. That's the kind of thing where I'm like, if theoretically I would like to have it, but the actual reality of, like, where do I put it?
I would love it. Because, you know, if it's the one that they dropped, it probably has no face. It's, like, foam and broken apart and, yeah.
Let me say this. It's the sort of thing you get after you've been married for a while.
Yeah.
And she knows that she's in it.
Yeah.
And she's, like, really going to make a commitment. Right. It's not the sort of thing one brings into the front way of your house when you're single.
That's right.
Looking to mingle.
That's right. Yeah.
Hey, nice place. What's this now? Oh, why, that's the Blofeld dummy from For Your Eyes Only. Wait, ma'am?
They dropped it.
Where are
you going? Oh, I'm going to get a wedding dress. I've never been more turned on.
Okay, so you'd take it and you'd put it in your entryway. Do you really think you'd put it in your entryway?
No, but I would take it.
Like, the reality of it, I want you to really think about it, Matt, in case I can get my hands on one.
Oh, God.
Where would you put it?
I think at some point we're going to renovate the garage into a studio or something. I'd put it in there as a little showpiece.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Excellent choice.
All right. Good to know. Just in case.
Okay.
I don't know why I think I can get my hands on one. But the reason
you brought it up twice makes me think that you may have a line onto this, and now I'm disappointed if it doesn't.
I'm going to see your browser tabs. I feel like you've got an eBay window open for...
Guys, that would be on eBay. It's a higher quality item. Okay.
Also, is that... Did they have to fish that thing out of a smokestack? Is there like a hatch at the bottom?
I'm assuming it's a series of identical wheelchairs and identical mannequins.
Just down at the bottom still?
Uh-huh.
We got to rappel down that smokestack.
Yeah, let's do it.
That'll be like the opening
of The Force Awakens when you're dead. Instead of looking for scraps in a Star Destroyer, we're looking for...
But you go, can you imagine going down there? There are eight wheelchairs and eight Blofeld dummies. And does the cat get... The cat gets free.
The cat does get free. They actually make a point of showing the cat get away. Yeah.
To show the cat.
Well, thank God in at least the movie they were kind to the cat, because in the production they had no qualms about just pinning it down against its will.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's some great
footage. There's a lot of footage of the cat struggling.
Oh, there's some that makes it in You Only Live Twice.
Does not want to be there.
Donald Pleasance is clearly like almost has it in a stranglehold and it's just going...
Because I feel like the cat is, while he's trying to hold down the cat is digging deeper into Donald Pleasance.
And he's the consummate professional.
All right.
Where you feel like Telly Savalas would have just drop kicked that thing. Oh. The shell torn. All right. So the music.
Yeah. The For Your Eyes Only theme. I like the chorus. That's it. It's the only part of the song I like.
It's catchy, but it's never been one that's stayed with me in a great way.
I prefer the more up-tempo Bond themes, generally speaking. It's interesting, again, that it's 1981. The rise of the music video is now clearly trending upward, and they've decided, like, oh, we need to actually see people singing now.
Yeah.
That's what we're doing now.
It's the first time.
Yeah,
the
I think it's historically significant for that reason of, like, oh, this MTV thing, I think, is not going anywhere. Yeah. This is, we should show. Also, she's stunning.
Yeah, I'd forgotten how beautiful Sheen
Easton was.
Despite her mom hair at the time, I mean, she has...
Yeah, but that was that kind of mom hair, though. That mom hair at the time was not mom hair. That was just awesome hair.
That was Samantha Fox hair.
Yeah.
It's not my favorite song by a damn sight, but it is interesting. Again, speaking of the trend consciousness of the Bond franchise, that they're like, oh, well, we essentially can put a music video in the front of our film.
The kids want MTV, we'll give them MTV.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Cubby Broccoli.
Yeah.
The Blondie rejected For Your Eyes Only has really grown on me. Did you know about that? Originally Blondie did a version of it?
Really?
Not that song. I'll bring it up. You guys continue to talk, but we've covered this before.
I don't know where he gets his hands on these songs that were rejected, but he has a file of them that is immense.
Wow.
Like,
of rejected Bond themes.
Like, there was wasn't there a Radiohead one you had?
Well,
I've heard that. I haven't heard it, but I've heard there was one.
Yeah.
They were going to do Spectre?
Yeah.
Really?
It was apparently submitted. Johnny Cash submitted one for Thunderball.
Which I love, that Thunderball one.
Can you guys hear this?
No.
No, we can't.
Oh, now we can.
I like this a lot.
Yeah.
I like this a lot. Dig it. I dig it.
There is also another For Your Eyes Only version of the Sheena Easton song that was a first pass on it that's similar but slightly different to you guys can get on your internet and Google
it's also, but it's also Sheena Easton's vocal?
I think so. I feel like, yeah, I think so. Because I think...
I don't know, man. I don't have this file.
We've covered all this before.
I know we have, yeah. But it's been years.
I know.
It's been many years.
Maybe we should do a full episode on all the rejected...
Oh, you there should. You go.
Songs, yeah.
There you go.
That's fun.
People love that.
Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. No M in this movie.
He had apparently passed.
He had passed, and it is.
And they weren't ready to fill the role yet.
I know.
So he's on leave?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bernard Lee, I want to say.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Love May him. He rest. Yes. Who takes over for M after this?
Robert Brown.
Okay.
Who is the minister of.
No.
What is he in this?
He's not that guy.
No, what he's in this. Robert Brown's in this.
No, that's not Robert Brown.
Isn't that Robert Brown?
Robert Brown is the guy that plays M in the next movie. But
right.
He's heretofore never been in it. Who is the guy
Jeffrey that I'm
King,
looking at and I'm going like, oh, that's Robert Brown.
No, that's the Minister of Defense and he's in a bunch of them. For some reason, they thought they needed like two authority figures often. He's often in there with M, both
M's. It takes two authority figures to make up for one M.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's weird, too, because there's very, very few gadgets in this movie, yet three times as much Q as we're used to.
I know. Like, yeah, he comes
It's a
back.
Lot of Desmond Llewellyn.
And disguise. He's in disguise.
Right.
He dresses as a priest in this movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
he
that's
really
right.
has a lot of,
yeah,
a lot
it's,
of work.
It's, but he basically does, Q shows up, does a Google image search, and then Fs off until, and again, that was what bothered me when I was 10 years old was just, where are the toys, man?
Yeah, right.
Because Moonraker's got like, it's
yeah.
Even the girls have gadgets.
Yes.
In Lois Childs has gadgets.
There's
in
a whole
in
gadget
Moonraker.
Porn scene.
That's right. Yeah. Deadly Diary, yeah. If I recall, right? Yeah. So it's so strange how it flaunts that convention.
Mm-hmm.
But it also makes for a slightly less silly film. Until that ending.
That ending. We'll save it till the end of this. Yeah.
I'm just blown away by this Robert Brown not being in this movie. And this whole time I'm like, that's him. That's
yeah,
totally him.
I know.
He takes
really,
over.
Octopussy is his first movie.
Really makes the whole thing less enjoyable for me now.
Interesting. He does kind of blend into that, you know, well, they were probably only in their 60s. They look 70 or something, but.
They're probably 48.
I know.
They're probably 48
true.
Years
it's
old.
True. Yeah, true. No, British people in that era, that was, yeah.
There's also often this thing about, you know, every time a Bond girl is cast, there's the PR thing of like, this is a different Bond girl. She's really strong, blah, 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 blah. Melina Havelock, as written, really is kind of her own independent streak. She's pretty kick-ass and...
Well, we first meet her, she... Oh, no, we don't... No, she watches her father die when we first meet her, but the next time we meet her, she kills a bunch of people.
Right.
And with a crossbow.
Yeah.
But then is, of course, immediately grabbed by the hand and lured into the jungle where she's the one who's familiar, not to get all, like, freshman year film student on it, but right. It is striking how quickly Bond is just like, well, that was amazing. You saved my life. Excuse me. I'm going to take your hand and we're going to get it.
But the reason that I find that interesting is because then they reverse it twice where after his car blows up, she grabs him by the hand and says, follow me.
That's right.
And then they're in her car and she shifts the gears and like can't wait for him to do it.
That's
she says,
right.
Go backwards,
good point.
Forwards. And he's kind of what? And she just shifts for him. And I don't know. She does have a fuck you attitude that I kind of like.
I love that. It's cool that we're skipping ahead to this car chase. I don't know how chronologically you want to go.
Whatever, it's fine.
That car chase, A, just works as a car chase. And it's also funny that it's, I mean, what are they driving? Is
it
a lit car? It's a Citroen?
Yeah.
Okay. It's not a particularly sexy Bond mobile.
No, that's
and
the point.
I love
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
It's, they, his fancy souped up car blows up. That's terrific. And then they end up doing what looks to my American eyes like a Le Car, basically. Yes. Just cruising around. Where are they? Northern Spain at this point? Or
they're Albania? Or no, they're in Greece.
I thought they were
in Greece
Spain,
till later.
Right. Yeah, they are in Spain.
I think they start in Spain.
Yeah, they talk about that in the documentary that because they're Cuba. Trying to counter the excess of Moonraker, that even that car thing was a way of like, let's play with it. Let's blow up Bond's flashy car and go to this jalopy and just see how that feels.
And it feels great, and it presents incredible stakes because you're not sure if that car is going to survive that tumble.
Right.
You know,
right.
it kind of just barely does.
Right.
And I love what a total shitbox it is.
Yeah.
So she was dubbed Carol Bouquet.
I also
she's dubbed by herself, I believe.
Yeah.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very.
But often
they do that weirdly
girls,
a lot.
Especially the women in the movies are dubbed frequently by different voices, but I think that's her voice. Let me check.
I do like how the townspeople are so used to flipping over citrons that they all just go, all right. They're like, there's no like, hey, we did it.
Literally takes a village.
Yeah, go ahead. Have fun.
Maybe she was. I'm not sure. Let's see.
I don't know why we're so.
She was dubbed. She dubbed herself in the French version, but she was dubbed.
Oh, yeah. You can tell.
That does.
And then I went on IMDb and I was like, yeah, that feels like that's not her.
Yeah. And the downside of that is she already has really sleepy eyes, and so when you put that voice that doesn't quite match her physicality, it just sort of feels like she's sedated the entire time.
Yeah, no, she's pretty opioided up, it feels like. Let's talk about the women in the film. So she's interesting, and I like that she's got real hardcore personal stakes that are not Bond's, but are valid.
It seems that her personal stakes are all the result of the fact that she's half Greek. I'm half Greek.
Oh, she
I
does
must
say
admit
that.
She
yes.
says this.
Well,
this
she compares her herself to Elektra.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Her explanation to him is, I'm half Greek,
you wouldn't
so
understand.
I have to avenge.
That's
this
great.
Is pulled
I love
from
it.
Fleming, though. This is one of the few things in this movie is a woman on revenge with a crossbow.
Oh, really?
That's
from the text?
It's a short story, I think. I forget which one.
Oh. It totally tracks, too, that she's like wielding a crossbow. Like, she seems like the type that grew up with a crossbow.
Yeah.
No, she's super badass with it. It's really fun to watch.
And I love the Countess.
Oh, the Countess Liesl.
She's so delightful.
Brosnan's wife.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah.
The Countess is a great character. Can we talk for a moment about Holly the skater?
Yes. You can't talk about this movie without it.
I remember that killing in front of the audience. It's weird what I can recall from 37 years ago, but when James Bond is like, I'm not going to fuck you.
Yeah.
You're too young. I'll go buy you an ice cream.
Uh-huh.
It killed. It
really?
Played so well in front of a crowd. And so that's weird. But it's also interesting. Apparently, she's like maybe 18 months younger than Carol Bouquet, but she looks so kind of wholesome in pigtail.
Right. I know. They also play it up with her kind of doing a whiny voice, like, I don't want to do this.
Poop.
Yeah. Gosh.
Do I have to?
Yeah.
So weird.
And she's fresh off that Ice Castles fame.
Yeah.
That was.
Yeah.
It is something like.
Ice Castles was huge.
I was talking
I'm
to
sorry,
my
I'm
going to
play the age card here. Ice Castles was enormous.
Me too. But
what
it's something
was
that,
Ice Castles?
It was just a movie about a figure skater who falls in love.
But she goes blind.
Yeah.
But this is something that was huge at the time, but never transcended out of that generation. Like, it didn't survive. I asked my wife.
It doesn't last. It doesn't, like, have the stay that, like, Dirty Dancing was huge at the time, and history has been strangely kind to it.
Yeah.
Ice Castles does not have that cachet.
Like, let
only
me ask,
people of that generation seem
no, you
to
had
remember.
To be alive and
I guess
like, watch
have to
the
ask
ads.
The audience, is the cutting edge, that film? Does
That's
that film
the same
transcend,
thing Amanda
or
said.
Is that
Well, she goes, are you thinking of The Cutting Edge? And I'm like, oh.
Cutting Edge is like 13, 14 years later.
Yeah. Right, yeah, but I'm wondering if that, see, I feel like The Cutting Edge is my Ice Castles.
It may be, but the difference with Ice Castles was, it was more of a like, well, she goes blind or he goes blind?
She goes blind.
And Robbie Benson helps
Robbie
her.
Benson, because it was 1979 and you had to put Robbie Benson in your film. We are a country of laws, Matt.
If I remember correctly, it was Ice Castles and Little Darlings were these young adult movies that just were the rage at the time.
And they were on cable every 20 minutes.
That's right, yeah.
And then they weren't.
With Bond movies. Like, it was basically For Your Eyes Only, Octopussy and View to Kill on heavy rotation on HBO, and then Ice Castles or Little Darlings would come up.
Yep.
Ice Castles would be interesting to watch again. We should do an in-between episode.
If we do that before we get to this fucking Kid Brother, Operation Kid Brother or something,
never
that'd
say
be
never
so
again.
Mad.
But she's a, it's a weird, because he gets a ton of information from her,
yeah.
Doesn't fuck her, ergo she lives.
True.
Right.
She doesn't, she's not the disposable Bond girl because, you know, she hasn't been sexed up, so she can survive. And then that takes us to that ridiculous scene in the hockey rink.
Yeah. But just her character, and there's something
off about it.
Yeah. It doesn't stand the test of time.
There's something uncomfortable about it, but also like, I get it. I get what they were doing.
She's hurling herself at this 52-year-old man, for one thing. That's a little...
But even her hurling is like spoken to such an extent where she's like, oh, I could just eat you up. Like, you just don't get... I know a lot of young women are attracted to much older men, but there's something about her that is so like voracious about it that is off-putting. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, well, because it has a, you know, I mean, listen, to accuse a Bond film of having a whiff of male fantasy is adorable, John, but but there is a whiff of like, oh, wouldn't it be awesome if you were so powerful that you could turn this down?
I guess that's what I mean. You put it better. I didn't really say like her attraction to an older man is off-putting, but there is something that it's obviously coming from a male's perspective.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, wow. She, Her performance is interesting too, because was she an Olympic athlete in real life or just a figure skater? Because that's how she was in Ice Castles, and she's a badass skier for real.
Think
like
she was an Olympic athlete.
She might have been like 76
but I, like,
or something.
In the skiing
yeah.
scenes, you can see that Roger Moore is clearly roped into that sled thing that they use for On Her Majesty's Secret Service, where they only film him from the waist up, but she's just behind him, like skating or skiing circles
also,
around
like, the
him.
The noises she's
it.
Making when like it's more of that like whee
ha all in studio. Months later,
That stuff works too, though. That ski scene is effective when he's on the little toboggan run or whatever.
So good,
it's really effective. It looks great. The green screen is very sporadically deployed, so most of it is just lawn shots of people really, really risking their lives.
I know it's Willie Bogner, and they talk about that in the documentary too, about how the bobsled is way too heavy. He'll never be able to ski as fast as that. And John Glenn, the director, goes, do you mind if we cable you to that? And he just goes, sure, why not? So he's being pulled by that bobsled as he goes down.
Wow. How does it stop? How do they stop? What happens?
I was wondering that myself. Like maybe they slow break and he just kind of shushes or like plows down. I don't know. I mean, that guy's incredible. He does all like skiing camera work in these films too. And as we learned, has his own line of snowwear that I was hoping was a Bond B on his zipper, but it's actually Bogner.
That's a shame.
And always worth watching those documentaries to see him interviewed. And he is so sunburned and lip chapped. His lower lip is like, it just looks like a rotten peach.
I bought the film on Amazon. Did not have the option to rent, so I now own a digital copy of Your Eyes Only.
We gifted that to you, and iTunes has it.
My bad. No worries.
That's
not at all.
By the way,
just got a season three.
You don't have
it.
Just ask. We get it to you. But
it was literally like I can go because I checked online to see if one of the libraries had it.
Sure.
They had it at the Central Branch downtown, and I was like, I can go downtown. I can pay $10 for parking.
Oh, this is too much work you've done for this. Now
I
feel bad.
Or I can just pay the
$12
and get
the.
But I wish I'd been able to watch the DVD because I love Bond DVDs. They're great. They understand what a DVD can do better than a lot of people. They're all
because they were doing it in LaserDisc time. They were putting out that shit.
All the Dr. No Blu-ray is fantastic. Right. They're all just packed with cool shit, and I regret not. I'll go rent it. What the hell? I'd love to watch some documentary stuff about this movie.
They've started doing that on Amazon for some movies where now you can buy it with the special features.
iTunes,
just tacked onto the end.
That way.
Yeah.
On iTunes, you get everything.
Oh, really?
I'm king of iTunes. Sorry. Well,
that's true. Yeah. I'm not going to back away from that. I'm the king of iTunes.
Mad and Mad. Mad and Mad. James Bonding Podcast.
There's a brand new podcast called John Levenstein's Retirement Party out now on Stitcher Premium.
It's hosted by writer, actor, and producer John Levenstein, who's written for some hilarious shows you've probably seen, like Arrested Development and Silicon Valley.
In celebration of John's long career in show business, he will share personal stories from the writer's room, offer advice, rehash old decisions, settle feuds, and tell friends he loves them.
John and his co-host, actress and writer Mary Kobayashi, talk with people from all different facets of the entertainment industry, like Karen Kilgariff, from My Favorite Murder, Nick Kroll from Kroll Show, My Favorite Kroll Show, Jill Soloway from My Favorite Transparent, and David Harbour from Stranger Things and Quantum of Solace.
James Bonding tie-in. Listen to John Levenstein's Retirement Party out now on Stitcher Premium.
Go to stitcherpremium.com/Levenstein. That's LEVENSTEIN. And use promo code BOND for a free month of listening. Quantum of Solace.
Man.
Let's talk about this identigraph.
I'm happy to talk about the identigraph.
The identigraph takes not a lot of time.
By the way,
it does because
it takes so much time.
That staff all leaves. There's a passage of time in that scene. Did you notice it?
But also, I love the idea that the Minister of Defense and not Robert Brown are so familiar with the identigraph. Just use the identigraph.
I feel like it's go down and use the fancy new machine we just paid millions of dollars for. We're all so excited about it.
That was the vibe I got. Yeah.
This is something I noticed for the first time, too. When they sit down to use the identigraph, the room inexplicably goes red. Like the lights all turn red.
Yes.
Like it's either signifying do not come in here or top secret or like almost like you're developing film.
Yeah, exactly. Is this supposed to be a dark room? What are we being told here?
Who was responsible for that? I think it should go red when they turn it on.
But also, it's poorly scripted interplay between Desmond Llewellyn and Roger
Caucasian.
Moore. Caucasian.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorry. that's all that is happening.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess it takes hours. It feels very much like he has a mustache, longish hair. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah, what they show you is just
by the way, they kind of nailed it in the first 4 seconds,
right?
Because everyone had that hair.
Come back to it, and all that's happened is there's a few more lines on his face.
Those weird octagonal glasses or whatever, and everyone's got a Bay City Rollers haircut, so you're off to the races, yeah.
This is a henchman that I feel like always flies under the radar, and every time I watch this movie, I remember how much I like him, because he's pretty subtle. I also noticed for the first time, too, when Melina shoots that Cuban guy at the pool, and everybody scrambling to deal with that
as the blood fills up in the pool. Yeah,
he has his own little henchman there that I never noticed before, and that guy's about to do something, and he just waves him off like, "No, let's just sit and watch where this goes."
Yeah, that was weird. Yeah.
I liked it. I liked it because the idea of the plan of him just looking at that happen and going "Oh, I'll just take the money back."
Yeah, did you know that? I noticed too when they get up to leave, his little henchman takes the money that the Cuban had given to that girl,
And she just goes, aw.
glorious.
These movies, they all have just wonderful little nooks and crannies.
That's right.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about the town they go to, the ski town.
Yeah.
Sure.
The
Cortina, is that what it was?
Maybe.
Northern Italy. They're in the Italian Alps, right?
Yeah. The carriage ride, I feel like we just don't give enough credit to the guy who's driving the carriage.
No, I give a ton of credit for that guy. I give a ton of credit to the weird little guy who looks like he wandered over from Fiddler on the Roof.
Yeah, to the actor. Yeah. The character is a horrible person when a woman wants to leave and he's not, he's just allowing a man to keep her
captive. I think
captive.
He understands everything at stake here.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And then at the end, amore.
So weird.
What?
Amore, kidnappo.
They went to abusive relationship.
Coercion.
Italiano.
Yeah, it's that whole sequence is the weird fight scene where he's using the what do you call those?
The barriers.
The barriers, knock the guys off the bikes. the...
I love that he paid for the lilies and I assume the windows.
Yes.
You can see that joke coming a mile away, but it's still fun when it, when it comes.
Yeah. I forget. I'm sure we talked about this last time, but there is this woman that will follow me on Twitter and then a few months later will follow me again. Like clearly she's following and unfollowing to get followers. You know how people kind of do that?
Yeah. No, I don't.
But she follows me in two separate accounts and she's, I think that woman in the...
No.
Yes. Lily Shop?
I believe she's in this movie. She's either her or one of the like poolside girls.
What are you saying with your mouth?
She was there too. She was there too.
No, hold on. This is why I'm hesitant because we've talked about this before. I brought it up. She has two Twitter profiles. She'll follow me with both of them. One is Bond girl, former Playboy model. And the other is uber Christian conservative. And I don't know if she's both or one.
Now, hang on. Playing both. If you are a girl who was in a Bond movie, that does not technically make you a Bond girl. We're talking about the woman who runs the floral shop.
She calls herself a Bond girl.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I don't want to be a dick.
She also was in Playboy, but I don't know if she was like a playmate. Like, I don't know to what
end. She wrote a cartoon. She did a cartoon.
I wonder if I can find her.
She wrote a cartoon.
She won a caption contest.
Yeah.
That's rough. That is rough. I can't summon her at all. I can picture the shop. I cannot summon her at all. I'm trying to picture
light brown hair, right? Light brown feathered hair. She's in like a yellow sweater.
Well, I mean, that's a safe bet. It's 1981.
I'm just not sure if that's the woman I'm talking about, but she did tweet at me once to something to the effect of either wanting to come on this podcast or I was there too, and I can't remember.
Well, I think we should have her on at a undisclosed location.
That's for our safety or hers?
Everyone's.
Okay.
I mean, we can't let her in here. She'll steal this Blofeld wheelchair statue.
That's right. Oh, man. Well, speaking of Fiddler on the Roof, Topol.
Yeah.
Speaking.
Oh, man. He's great in this.
He is. He is so enjoyable.
He is. He's fun to watch.
His choice to eat pistachios throughout the film is so delightful. And I do wonder, how much of that was him to do this.
Yeah, it feels like that wasn't even in the script because he's basically saying, I smuggled diamonds.
Diamonds, gold, pistachios.
And I feel like, can we just put pistachios in? I want to have a little quirk. You know, a Bond villain quirk.
But I wonder, here's who this is. This is John Glenn, no?
Yeah. His first.
Okay, so this is John Glenn. So I wonder what I feel like actually probably happened was he said, I want to have these pistachios in this scene at my desk. And then John Glenn, not being a great director, was like, every scene, you're having these pistachios in every scene.
Yeah.
He's like, you sure? He's like, yeah.
Well, write him in because doesn't he throw him down and use him as a...
Yeah.
Like... Track.
Oh yeah, that's right. He uses him to find out when the bad guys are coming in the safe house or whatever.
But also, what I love about him is that he chooses not to crack open the pistachio.
No,
just do it.
It's
with
all
his
done
teeth
in the mouth.
And then
it's
spit
all
out the
done
mouth
in the mouth.
He's Topol.
Yeah, that's Topol.
Oh, what a
listen!
Muscle.
They all serve in the military, the Israelis.
That's right.
The least dangerous thing the man has ever done is open a pistachio with his teeth. The least dangerous thing, without. So I'm a massive Topol fan, anyway. I love the film of Fiddler on the Roof. I adore Flash Gordon.
Oh yeah.
Flash Gordon is really one of my top, probably one of my top 10 movies. I adore that film. Wow. I really think it is because it. You know what? To sidebar real quick. It took me years to grasp this, but Flash Gordon was my introduction to the idea of camp, to the idea of like something is so over the top and so dumb.
Did you realize that at the time?
I did, and that's why
that's
it's such a thing.
Ahead of your time.
I was like, and it was the moment where Sam Jones puffs off his chest and goes, I don't have time to go to any moon. I have to rescue my friends and save the earth. And I was like, what is that talking?
Yeah.
What is? Oh, but I like it. It's dumb. But I like it. And so I don't have, like, I'm not quoting Susan Sontag when I'm 9. I just had an understanding that, like, this is so grandiose and so over the top and ridiculous that it comes around to the other side where it is actually quite good and entertaining and has value.
I totally agree. I did not catch it. I was a sincere fan of that as a young boy seeing that in a theater.
I think I'm a couple years older than you.
Yeah.
And then I noticed the name Lorenzo Semple showing up on Batman, and that took me backwards to look at Batman again and be like, oh, same thing. Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Speaking of great Blu-rays, by the way, the Flash Gordon Blu-ray is a doozy. It's
oh, got really? Great stuff that's on it. Yeah. Funny. I just bought that one on iTunes. King of iTunes. King of iTunes.
My wife saw Topol do Tevye not 5 years ago at
what?
The Pantages. He still does it. He still...
I wasn't even sure he was alive.
He is still alive. She said it was like the first time he'd played the role.
I believe
he was a consummate professional. The girl who played his, if you've ever heard me on a podcast, you know I'm a big musical theater aficionado. Bear with me. The girl who played his eldest daughter in the film was playing his wife 40 years later, playing Golda, his wife, at the Pantages. And my wife saw it and said it was one of the best like performances she's ever seen.
Oh, I would go see that.
Right? And he is, it's interesting because he lets you know pretty quickly that he's not the bad guy you think he is.
Yeah.
But there's still something so sort of charming about him that you're not sure if he's telling the truth.
Right.
It's an interesting dynamic. I really like this part of the film a lot.
So much so that I find the villain, what's his name, Glover?
It's not Julian Glover.
Julian Glover.
Yeah.
I find him to be a disappointment in the shadow of Topol. Like,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's not. He's just sort of a it's sort of just standard, cold, icy psychopath stuff.
Yeah.
But Topol's got that charming ass smile.
Yeah, he's great.
He's so likable. And we never talk about him when we talk about like the Bond
mentor
ally.
You guys just needed me, man. He's Israeli Felix Leiter, man. He's a goddamn delight.
He's
super fun.
Even by the time they go to the base of that mountain to climb, the collection of the small group, you've got Topol, you've got Roger Moore, Carol Bouquet, and also these faces of these his little three
Greek
men that are with him.
Yeah.
I describe them as if you, a police sketch artist was, you describe Davy Jones to a police sketch artist.
And you get different versions
that's
by different
what you
artists.
You get those
that's
three men that are
incredible.
With him.
Incredible.
I feel like, especially the guy that's up on top of the mountain that kicks Roger Moore down.
Yeah.
Reminds me of one of the guys that was a regular on Sesame Street. And there's also one of Topol's guy is like John McEnroe. Looks like John McEnroe.
Oh, yeah. McEnroe or Will Ferrell. And then you're describing Davy Jones, and that's everybody else in the movie.
But the way that they are dressed, because this is coming back from just getting back from Switzerland, where I found myself dressing kind of like this. I call it commando casual. It's the only way I want to dress. Sweaters and vests. Like, you kind of like... You have to be
under
warm, but it's not freezing.
Yeah.
And just like, it's either like, it's somewhere between photojournalist and like CIA covert ops or something. I don't know.
I'll tell you, the vest is an underrated piece of material.
It really
like,
is.
Like, it just, it's so functional. Keeps your torso warm.
Unfortunately
so
for me,
extra pockets.
I get cold in my shoulders and my arms.
Oh, no.
So a vest, just thinking.
We gotta get you a thicker sweater.
We talked for a moment about Charles Dance.
Oh, yeah.
Charles Dance shows up in this.
Yeah.
Doing so little that you're like, oh my God, this is really early Charles Dance.
It is. I think it's one of his earliest roles. Yeah.
But he's what a face on that
guy. I know. Oh. Yeah. He's incredible. I've always known him as a like distinguished, interesting looking gentleman, but here he's actually quite striking.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that scene where he's pursuing him up the ski jump.
And he can't like he can't go after him
because
there's all the crowds there. It works, I think. It's a really effective scene. Yeah, there's stuff in here that even without the music, the suspense work, the action is well coordinated, the geography of the action is well done, where everybody is in relation to everybody else, so that helps you grasp the stakes.
I think that comes from John Glenn first being an editor and then a second unit director.
Oh, no kidding?
A lot of the action.
They make terrific directors.
Yeah,
people who
like
start
it.
Out of editing or second unit stuff, because we've had a few of them actually, for what it's worth, we've had a few people who have come from those worlds in on Speechless, because we have a different director every week, which is kind of fun to meet all these people. And some of them have done some features. Most of them work in TV. But what you find with the people who have come from editing is that they shoot the ass off a scene. They just shoot like 16 fucking angles and hours of
Does
footage.
Does that bum you out at all?
It bums me out, but I also know it's going to work in the long run.
Yeah.
It's a drag to do it, but you also know they're going to have a ton of options to cut together the best possible version. And then the second unit people treat you like props who eat. And they're just like, you got to run around this corner real quick, and then I need you to hit that mark every single time. Don't look, just boom. And it's all about like moving people around. So it's interesting that he came from both and made these pretty credible action sequences. Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't find John Glenn's action directing to be lacking. I think he does a great job with the action.
Yeah, especially of that time. It does feel very of that time, but in the best way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do find the rest of his direction to be a little lacking.
Yeah, I don't think he quite...
And I can't put a finger on what it is.
It lacks depth, I guess, maybe. It's a little surface, like all because it's Roger Moore, too. It's like,
right.
You know, this is the one film that we ever see Roger Moore go dark, and that's kicking Locke off the mountain with the car that they, you know...
Oh, right.
It was going over anyway.
Huh?
He couldn't stop that, you know? It just helped it.
Yeah.
It's a little quicker.
No, that's right. Yeah, he does. Yeah, I guess that is. Yeah, it just feels sort of pedestrian, the rest of the directing. It's just like, okay, we're going to shoot over your shoulder, then we're going to shoot over your shoulder. Here's a wide. We're done.
It's not particularly dynamic.
No.
I always remember, too, when it's when they're doing that raid with Topol and his men on that, like, is it a heroin?
Yeah.
Barrels or
the
whatever
big paper
those
walls.
Are.
And
you see that giant diving bell suit. It always reminds me, oh, that's right, we have a long underwater scene coming up. And that's where this film drags for me, yeah.
It really does drag, and it's weird because I was trying to figure out why that scene sucks so much, because the stakes are there. They have 8 minutes of air or something like that. You have a ticking clock, but then they ignore the ticking clock, and that scene's easily 16 minutes. Probably isn't, but it feels really long.
It's probably 7:59.
There's no music.
No music. He ignores his own advice. They come out of that submarine, and he says... Speak only when necessary.
And then he can't shut the fuck up. He's just thinking out loud. Thinking out loud for the whole thing. And then the guy comes in and it takes... And they fight him and they put the little explosive charge on his helmet, but it takes forever to go off and you know it's coming.
Yeah.
But when it does finally come, it's a little anticlimactic, just kind of blows them out of the wreckage.
That scene should be amazing. And... because of the music, the placement, and something about it isn't...
It's automatically going to be in slow motion because it's underwater. Right. So already you've got to play against that, and you can do that with, you know, some strings or some goddamn brief, you know, wah-wah guitar, Bill Conti, war criminal.
They shouldn't be allowed to shoot underwater anymore.
I know.
I'm over it.
Was that the last...
Think of him under. I mean, even him underwater in Casino Royale is a little like. I mean, the stakes are there.
Oh, but that's so quick.
And it's like in the middle
at the end.
Of the thing. Yeah.
That's really quick though.
Yeah.
And that's
but he's moving very slowly.
Well, it's water.
Yeah, I don't care.
They're
for
not
it.
Even underwater in
I don't
this
care
movie.
For it.
I know we talked about that last time too, but she had like a sinus issue, so all of her close-up shots are shot out of water on a set. With a fan in slow motion and bubbles dubbed in later.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. I remember reading that she had a sinus thing. That scene is a clunker. It also doesn't quite track that those bodies are so well preserved, haven't been underwater for a couple of weeks at that point,
you'd
right?
Yeah, you'd think they'd be food.
Right? That is where the film starts to kind of grind for me a little bit.
Anytime they're underwater,
in
any part of the franchise,
it really
even in Skyfall, the underwater fight in Skyfall, which is lit beautifully,
it's
just slow.
Yeah, we're not big underwater fans here.
It's also the problem with most of the Moonraker action
in space,
zero gravity.
Zero G of it all, and the fact that I'll say it 1,000 times, but you don't move slower in zero G. Stop pretending. That you do.
It's
if you can get your hand on something, you can move faster than you can on Earth. There's no resistance.
Very good point.
All right.
Thank you very much, Dr. Tyson.
You're welcome.
Let's talk about the size of Q's hands. This is a recurring segment here where we one point noticed that Q's hands are enormous.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Disproportionately enormous. And so we set GoldenEye as the standard. And you may not have noticed in this film, because I think they're relatively small. They're still huge.
Yeah.
But I'd give them a GoldenEye minus 2.5.
Well, you know, I actually thought about this, man, and I actually have to go a GoldenEye minus 1. And it's from the typing.
Yeah. Oh.
It does look like he's really hitting two keys every time he wants to hit one.
That's a fair thing, because I had forgotten until we got to the priest scene when he pulls off his beard, so I was only going off that.
Oh,
so
sure, sure, sure.
I think I'll defer to you on this.
Yeah, you know, so much so now, John, that when you Google Desmond Llewellyn, the first suggested thing in Google is hands. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, we've done it.
You've talked about this so much? Really, you did that?
We've marked his legend.
Wow.
His legacy has been ruined.
I stand to be corrected. Desmond Llewellyn died in a car crash?
He did, yeah.
There's nothing crueler. I can't think of a crueler irony. That's fucking...
driving back from a book signing.
Oh, God.
Man. What a way.
Oy vey.
Well, speaking of cars blowing up and car accidents,
yes,
though, I do want to talk about the anti-theft, anti-burglary Lotus situation where the glass is very breakable by the butt of a gun.
Yeah.
But if you break that glass, the car will blow up.
Yeah.
That's the way it works.
I'm assuming you have to arm that, because if you get in a minor fender...
Doesn't he arm it? Doesn't he, like, hit the button? I feel like he goes...
Maybe.
I feel like
Dante didn't want his pre... Boop, boop.
Yeah, I think it is.
I feel like you were manually locking car. I mean, granted, he's got the quartermaster helping him out, but I feel like it, it still feels a little early for 1981.
In my brain. But that was... Wasn't that John Glenn's big addition to this film, where he was talking about how much carjackings had become a problem?
Well, car theft in New York at the time was a huge thing, and he talks about the reception in the theater when this came out, where everybody in New York was just, whoa.
Well, John, you saw this in New York. Did everyone cheer?
I don't remember. I don't remember that moment, how that played. It's weird what I do remember. I remember the audience reacting to the funny stuff, oddly enough. I remember the I'll go buy you an ice cream. I remember the audience reacting to the ending.
Almost there.
But I don't remember how they reacted to the various explosive things. Yeah. Look, it's completely worth it, because it puts them into that, you know, roller skate they end up conducting the rest of the...
Then they buy it back with another Lotus. There's immediately another... He immediately has access to the maroon Lotus.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
With two sets of skis.
Yeah. Well, you never know who he's going to meet out there.
That's true.
Q's got his back.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Let's do the...
Oh, I want to talk about the rock climbing. Yeah. That might be one of my favorite sequences in
it's good.
Of Roger Moore's action.
Oh, really?
I just love his outfit. I don't know what it is. I just love his outfit.
You love a barber vest.
And sweater. Oh, so good.
But just the idea of, like, you know, I found myself just frustrated as a fat person. Just the idea of each time that guy knocked one of those pings out of the rock face.
Yeah.
The fact that he had to start over again. Yeah. I just kept feeling so sad for him.
Yeah.
It's like, whatever you put on the 2 pounds you lost, it's like, oh, fuck, here I go again. I got to go back on this low carb.
It's an interesting sequence, though, because it is genuinely suspenseful.
Yes.
It really ages very, very well.
Yeah, the long shot of him falling is
amazing
too. They talk about that on the documentary.
It's amazing.
How Rick Sylvester did a lot of the, like, skydiving stunts in the other movies. Was very unsure how this thing was going to work, because it was like one of the first decelerating things that they just use a rope that's like got sandbags on it. It wasn't even a machine or anything like that. Or it was wrapped in a cloth. I forget how it goes. They later did it in, is it Sharky's Machine with Dara Robinson, where they had this machine that slowly decelerated. So he does this high fall off a building and never has to hit an airbag, because they cut before he decelerates.
Yeah.
But this was just some, like, Mickey Mouse, Rube Goldberg version of it. And you can tell when he retells the story, he's kind of going like, yeah, it turned out okay. But in retrospect, you can see him feeling like, I can't believe those fuckers did that to me.
It's
and I signed on for it.
It's insane. It's one of the best shots in the movie.
It's great. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really effective and it's really scary. And it's also such a fun use of the location too.
Yeah.
You know, like we have to get up to that weird butte up there and we can only go this way, and it just works on every level.
It reminds me that he shot the second unit on the film before, Spy Who Loved Me, when they did the parachute ski jump thing. It's very sort of similar in scope to that.
Yeah, and I also liked him taking his shoelaces off and climbing up.
Oh, that's cool.
Shoelaces.
Yeah.
So cool.
Yeah. Well, that I think is something that I appreciate more now than I did at the time, because, you know, at the time, I was like, he should have a gadget. Right. He should have like a little pocket jetpack or something. Yeah. But this is a more lo-fi Econobond.
Yeah.
And that's a great moment.
Any
that's
other
a really
movie,
resourceful, fun moment.
Any other movie, his shoe would have had a grappling hook in it.
Yeah.
You're right.
Whoop, that's me, sorry. Okay. All right. Yeah, so
we get to the ending. Topol kills Christatos. This is an interesting sort of like reverse Thunderball where she's about to kill him, where Domino kills Largo in Thunderball.
Yeah,
she doesn't get this satisfaction, but it's almost framed as you're better off because you don't have to do the Chinese double grave.
Yeah,
Chinese double grave.
Two,
yeah,
you
know. Sure.
Be ready to dig those two.
Topol shooting somebody in the back is great
cinema.
That's just terrific.
Yeah. It's you don't see him after that. It's presumed that he's just kind of passing out, right?
But who, Topol? You see him after that.
You do?
Yeah. And Bond goes, looks like you found a new sponsor.
Oh, that's
and he
right.
winks.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh,
Topol
yeah.
winks
oh,
at the
that's
camera.
Right. Oh, how can I forget that?
Yeah. Come on.
BB. Oh, that's gross. Even more gross. Because you know Topol is in for that.
Well, yeah. Topol
where Bond
just lost
finally
Topol
found
lost
his
the Contessa.
Line in the sand.
Huh? You know, he lost his Contessa, so that's he true, needs true. Someone true, to care true. For at this point.
Yeah, it's gross. Yeah, yeah. But he thrives. And then we get rid of the MacGuffin, and mm-hmm. that vanishes, and that helps.
And then on to
now that's the first time they'd encountered each other, huh? The Russian head of the CIA, head of the KGB,
is it?
And Bond, because there should have been more of a recognition, like for that guy to land and expect James Bond to hand him the machine. Crazy. So this must be the first time they've encountered each other.
He's been in the films before, but I can't remember if they've met. But then...
But also he should know what James Bond looks like.
We get Margaret Thatcher.
Apparently this was a very popular Margaret Thatcher impersonator.
Yeah.
She like was doing... She'd like do the talk show rounds and stuff. And the idea of just having her... mid dinner prep, swatting her husband's hand away as he reaches over
and
for
she's cooking.
It's so out of sync with this film and out of tone.
And but she's then, talking to a parrot.
On its own, it's really well done.
I don't know if I can go there. I don't know if I can go that far with you, man. I don't know if I.
But
it,
I thought her
it.
Timing
just takes me out of it. And it just like, this movie has so clearly been sucking its own dick for being like, we're grounded. We're a new Bond now. We're putting
everything.
It back down to earth. And then, and by the way, a Margaret Thatcher impersonator is going to talk to a parrot who she thinks is Bond.
Yeah. If there was ever an argument for discovering post-credit tag sequences before its time, this would be it. Like, bury this after the credits.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, in a Marvel movie, I'd be far more forgiving of this. Far more forgiving, but it is just so odd. And even though they've established the parrot.
Oh, my God. If they, in Infinity War Part 2, when they're going to put that one out, if they put a post-credit sequence of a Trump impersonator calling to thank the Avengers. Oh,
like they should have done that in all these because Diamonds Are Forever set in America during the Nixon administration.
Right, right.
Him in there.
What took so long?
Seriously.
It is. I remember people just howling in the movie theater, eating it up.
Yeah, and that's even America. Imagine what they did in England.
I know, right?
God. And I love that you can tell Dennis and also the Margaret Thatcher impersonator, they're probably in their early 30s.
Oh, totally.
It's really, it's spectacular. You forget that exists in the canon.
Yeah.
I actually, one of the big things I remembered about it was, and I remember when we confirmed it via email, I was like, this is the one with the Margaret Thatcher impersonator, is it not?
I wanted my reply to be, oh yes, friend, I would never... not give you that.
Oh boy.
Yeah, it's a weird tonal shift.
Yeah.
But it's funny, I gotta say, the middle part, aside from the abuse of the disabled and the Margaret Thatcher that bookends the film, I enjoyed so much more than I did upon its initial release.
Me too.
I gotta agree.
Then let's give it a rating from 00 to 007, 007 being best. Where would you put this film?
Do we do decimals?
You can absolutely do decimals.
Okay, I'm going to go 005.4.
Interesting.
Nice.
Wow. I think those bookends really drag it down quite a bit. But I think the stuff that works, works really well. And I think he looks great for, he's like, what, 51, 52 in this?
He's 53.
He's 53.
Oh,
yeah.
Baby.
52, 53. Who knows when his birthday is?
A double of 5.4. That's very close to where I am.
Me too,
on this, John.
Me
too. I'm actually going to just go with the solid dead even 005 for me.
As am I. I put down 005 within parentheses 0.5 question mark because this shot so far up in my esteem since the last time I watched it.
Yeah.
But I think you're right. Those bookends and there's always the score.
Well, it's not the bookend for me. It's the underwater.
That too.
Yeah.
That knocks the point off.
Yeah.
005 is a respectable showing.
Very.
Here with an average showing. Of, I guess, what,
005.2?
What are your 007s? Skyfall.
We haven't done it yet.
You haven't had a 007? Not even Skyfall?
We haven't issued a 007.
Skyfall's high up there.
We've issued some 006.5s.
All right.
Yeah. My 007's probably coming soon.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So, John, tell us where people can find you. And we know we can find you weekly on Speechless on
when
ABC.
We start back up again. Yeah, we'll be back this fall, it turns out. So that's exciting. I don't even know what our time slot is.
We hope to have you right smack after us.
Right after Goldberg. It's a nice little place to be. On the socials at John Ross Bowie. And yeah, I'm just kicking around. The occasional hot yoga class this summer, you know, I'll just be, and it takes some me time.
You don't want to say?
In the valley?
I don't want to say. You think I do it in the valley. You would think. Every yoga you do in the valley is a hot yoga valley, my friend. But yeah, it's, I'm just going to be bumming around this summer and then eagerly getting back to work probably August for a late September air date.
Just enjoy this hiatus.
I think I shall.
You know, you've
do
got
you have
the
that
pickup.
Long of a hiatus too?
You guys go back.
Beginning of June.
You're checking your watch.
I literally
today.
Go back in like a week and a half or something.
Man.
Like
really?
That. Yeah. Wow. We start writing.
Oh, wow.
But
we got to get some of those commentaries.
I know. Like we'd have to do it this week, essentially.
No, that's not going to happen.
So yeah, but John, enjoy the hiatus.
Like, thank you.
Just,
I shall.
Like, look at this time. You're an actor. You got steady work coming. You got a whole summer to fuck around in hot yoga.
That's the plan. Nice. Yeah. That is the plan.
That's what you work for.
You know what
for.
I will? I, honestly, I'm not just saying this because of where I am. This did whet my appetite to go back in and rewatch some Bond movies.
Yeah.
What do you think? What's your first going
to
be?
I'm going to go back to the Moors. I'm going to go back to the Moors, and I'm going to watch the Timothy Daltons I've never seen, I think.
Oh wow. Let us know how
Very
you feel
curious.
About those, because I know you. That's when you kind of made your break, but... that first
I don't think it was necessarily Timothy Dalton's fault. They just caught me at the wrong time. You know?
You might enjoy Living Daylights. It's kind of in line with this in that it's back to Fleming.
And if you want to see a reactionary James Bond movie, you watch yourself A License to Kill.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's
reactionary to all 80s drug dealer villains.
Also because it's sort of... Michael Kamen does the score, which is another kind of like Conti of the 80s.
Right.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, John, thank you so much for doing this.
My pleasure. Glad to be here.
Matt, we got to talk about what we're going to watch next.
That's right. It's your choice.
Yeah, it is.
We've only
got
three left.
I know. What are the three again?
Spy Who Loved Me.
Thank you.
And then Royale and Quantum of Solace.
Well, you know, I think we're going to do this the way we thought we were going to end up doing this. We're going to watch The Spy Who Loved Me next.
That's right. We'll save the first two Craigs for the last two films.
Yeah.
So it's time to go back to 1979.
And then we figure out if we're going to start the engine over again.
Oh, boy. Is that even up to us? I don't know.
It might be up to God.
That for sure.
Yeah. If he's out there.
Well, this was a very fun episode. And James Bonding
will return.
Hey, this is Arnie Niekamp from the improv fantasy podcast Hello from the Magic Tavern. I fell through a dimensional portal behind a Burger King in Chicago into the magical land of Foon, and I started a podcast. Season 3 has just begun with a brand new adventure to defeat the Dark Lord. If you're a new listener or you've fallen behind, Season 3 is a great jumping on point. And we've got great guests like Justin McElroy.
I sound like a fancy college professor. 8 nights.
Rachel Bloom.
You all see my collection of men corpses and one woman.
Felicia Day and Colton Dunn.
You've seen me have intercourse with a variety of species.
It's a bummer.
Andy Daly.
You have the members of Genesis listed, but Phil Collins is crossed out and then circled and crossed out again.
Yes, I have killed Phil Collins twice.
Thomas Middleditch.
Jesus! I mean, Jazos! Ruler of the Eighth Circle!
And that's just the beginning. Season 3 of Hello from the Magic Tavern is out now. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.